Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took.
So if you don't know much about history or French you took, doesn't really matter, according to the governor of Florida. Not many jobs for historians, you know, or French translators, so who really cares? Here's the thing. Florida Governor Rick Scott is floating the idea of lower state university tuition for what they call business-friendly majors in college and higher tuition for all those, well, other things that people might study.
They're taking your tax dollars, right? They need to make sure those tax dollars are spent well. How should they be spent? They should say, okay, people are going to universities and state colleges to get a job. They want education so they can get a job. So they should have programs that help you get a job. So they should be doing constantly surveys of what employers need. Do they need more individuals with degrees in science, technology, engineering, or math, or something else? Whatever it is, that's what the focus of our universities ought to be.
Florida Governor Rick Scott, he singled out anthropologists, by the way, as being particularly in excess. His daughter majored in anthropology, personal much. But then again, it's true that not enough Americans major in the science and technology fields. So let's talk about this with Michael Ruse, who has written about it for the Chronicle of Higher Education. He happens to be a professor at Florida State of zoology, business friendly, I'm not sure, and philosophy, definitely not. Thanks for doing this, Professor Ruse. Welcome to WNYC.
Well, thanks for having me on.
And I gather this actually came from a higher education task force that Governor Scott had impaneled. Do you know what they were looking for?
Well, I guess that what they were looking for was to put the boot into people like me, weren't they? What we're talking about is the whole question of America, Florida in particular, science education and all of these issues, and particularly when we're facing, you know, major challenges from places like China. So I don't think anybody wants to deny the importance of the sorts of things that Scott and his chums are talking about, namely that America needs to do a lot better on science education than it's doing at the moment. The question is, where do you go from there?
What's their definition of business-friendly major? Did they lay it out? Does this include everything
not as best I know. I mean, you know, this is one of those sorts of things, isn't it? You know, how long is a piece of string? And it's a question of what exactly they think at the time. I mean, you take, say, something like Spanish, particularly in a state like Florida. Now, Spanish is, on the one hand, obviously a humanities, learning Spanish. On the other hand, you know, it's surely about as business-friendly as you could get in a place like Florida. Not only do we have a lot of Spanish speakers, but, of course, we're right down there,
yeah,
right next to, well, you know, an
Latin
unnamed
America.
Island, you know, in the Caribbean. South America.
And so much of Latin America, right. So it's possible that the university would draw up tuition guidelines that would have Spanish as economy-friendly and French or German as not so much.
Okay, so then we move over, say, to history. Okay, now, are we going to have, particularly in a state like Florida once again, are we going to just have no history at all? Are we going to have, say, some history, some American history? Are we going to teach the kids, say, about the Civil War? Are we going to have some colonial history, for instance? Are we going to talk, for instance, about the slave trade? Are we going to talk about the Spanish and, you know, moving to South America in the 16th and 17th mm-hmm. centuries? I mean, this is, you know, once again, it's, you know, you start to cut up your string, and how short is it?
Well, to play devil's advocate here, did Governor Scott or the task force say there shouldn't be a core curriculum? Because they could say, well, you get a break if you major in something that's going to help the state's economy or the nation's economy, but there are going to be these requirements, so you get a well-rounded basic education.
Well, no. I mean, the point is, what the governor is pushing is trying to make us, trying to make us pay more for courses like philosophy and these sorts of things. I just don't know what Governor Scott would consider to be a core curriculum. I mean, would it include, say, one English course in 40? Would it include two English courses in 40? Would it include creative writing? Would it, this is the sort of problem that we're running into.
By the way, you're a zoology and philosophy professor.
Well, I'm a philosophy professor. I teach history and philosophy of science. Darwin is my thing, so there you go.
Right, so that's a kind of unusual combination of science and liberal arts. So I don't know if you get partial credit for being business friendly and partial not for your courses.
Well, I'll tell you something. If I had my druthers, I'd get full credit for being business friendly because, as it happens, you're not listening to a guy who says, oh, no, we need the arts and only the arts. I mean, I'm incredibly in favor of a lot more science, particularly for kids who are not getting it. I've got a son who's actually majoring in philosophy, mainly because his high school teaching in science was so dreadful, he couldn't pass the SATs or whatever it was to get into the science courses when he went to university. So one of the things we're doing, for instance, at FSU is we've got something called FSU Teach, where we're especially concentrating on trying to get science students to become science, high school and other teachers. So it's not. And who are the people doing this? People in history, people in education, all of these things, which, at one level, according to the governor, are not. What is it? Not central to our mission.
So this is one of those segments where I didn't even have to give out the phone number for all our lines to fill up. So as people get off, it's 212-433-WNYC and Santiago in the Bronx. You're on the air. Hello.
Yes. We have a democracy, and I'm presuming the public is responsible for making the choices of the country. Is it important that you have an educated and informed public to know what kind of choices to make rather than just one that knows how to, put a battery in a car or something?
In other words, what's the value of higher education? It's not just vocational school.
Exactly. We have to know, the global warming, history. We have to know history. What is it? The purpose of no history, history will repeat or whatever.
There you go. Santiago, thank you very much. In fact,
I think Santiago raised a very interesting question, though, about the whole issue of democracy. And some people would say, we've got a democracy. If people don't want the arts, then, let's vote it out. But as Santiago pointed out, having a democracy, it implies, or one hopes it implies, that you're going to have a well-educated public which is going to be able to make informed choices. And that, of course, does involve some English. I mean, imagine somebody, making informed choices who'd never heard of Melville or Hawthorne or Hemingway or any of these people, never looked at them. Somebody who vaguely knew that Lincoln was an important guy in the middle of the 19th century, but, he saw something on television. That's not how you run a democracy.
Len in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Thank you for my call.
Theater major, I gather.
I was, yeah. I studied theater at NYU. When you were first introducing your guest, I actually thought it was going to be the complete opposite of the point he's presenting, which definitely has my interest, but my original thought was that he was going to be giving more benefit to people that were studying the arts because it's something that you can't use right away, that's not plunged right into society, but that everyone ought to have a sense of, that we need to have a kind of communal appreciation for.
Yeah, you're definitely a liberal arts major.
Guilty.
Len, thank you very much. But we were discussing this in the office, Professor, and somebody came up with the notion that you could make a case for the opposite, even on financial grounds, cheaper tuition for liberal arts majors because they're cheaper to educate. That is, you don't need to buy all those electron microscopes and gas spectrometers and 3D printers. And the market is such that liberal arts professors get paid less than science and business ones. So actually, if you base tuition on cost to the university, the exact opposite should occur to Governor Scott's idea. Have you considered that?
I've certainly considered that. And, you know, it seems to me to be the reductio ad absurdum of the whole philosophy which lies behind things. I mean, sure. I mean, we all know that liberal arts is cheaper than the sciences. But the thought that FSU or NYU or whatever would, you know, drop their liberal arts prices to rock bottom so they could fill, you know, warm bottoms on all the seats, but let's not bother too much with quantum mechanics because it's expensive. I mean, it's horrifying. I mean, it's obviously a question of balances throughout. But it's also a question, and I mean, again, I talk from my side of the campus, of sitting down seriously and asking about, say, an area like philosophy and what contribution can its graduates make to society. And I've been teaching now for nearly 50 years, and I've seen an absolute sea change in the sorts of things that we in philosophy departments do. When I started, the thought that you would have discussions about abortion or capital punishment or any of the, you know, they just weren't on. Now, these are things that we deal with because, to go back to Santiago, these are the things that inform democratic voters must, you know, not agree on, but have at least some understanding of what's going on.
We're talking with Florida State University professor Michael Ruse, who teaches the philosophy of science, and his employer, the state of Florida, is considering the idea of cheaper tuition for people who are majoring in what they call business-friendly majors. Asan in Queens, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, good morning. Well, I completely agree with the governor 100%. I feel that if it's based on the major, right, you have to take, you know, arts and history and philosophy regardless of what major you take as prerequisites.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense to, you know, encourage students to take business and science and math because these are the type of jobs that we need. Also, I'm a hiring manager at a company here in New York City. A lot of the times we see, you know, candidates that have, you know, majors that have nothing to do with the type of positions that they're trying to get. And they're, you know, I understand experience is very important, but they're completely unprepared for the type of jobs that we're, mm-hmm. you know, that we're trying to hire them for.
So,
also,
Professor,
another point is...
Go ahead, Arsan. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Yeah. I have a feeling that, you know, arts majors, music majors, theater majors, these are like the bastions of the privileged, right? The privileged have the opportunity to take these majors because they can. People who have who come from a background of lower income, they have to take medicine or business or, you know, law or some type of skill or degree that will get them, you know, up the social ladder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, quicker and right away.
The economic cloud. So, Professor, you want to engage with Asan?
Well, I'm hearing, you know, some rather bitter class issues coming up here. And I think, of course, you know, I think it's very relevant in a way because it's very clear that our governor, who's a very talented man, and let's not kid ourselves about that, but has got a bit of a chip on his shoulder about higher education, you know. And you're right, all those rich artses, let's put it to them a bit. And I mean, you know, there are times when I want to say that, although I do want to assure you that I've had an awful lot of blue-collar kids through my philosophy classes in the course of my career. So it isn't just one or the other, for instance. I mean, I've often found, for instance, that young women from heavily ethnic backgrounds, you know, you would think that these would be the last people to want to do philosophy. But, of course, they've been brought up with a fair amount of philosophy in their religious education at religious schools. And so when they come to us and do philosophy, you know, they just take to it. So I understand where you're coming from, but I do want to assure you that it is not the case that every, you know, every philosophy major has a dad or a mom who's in the top 2% who I agree should be taxed all the hell.
Well, you have to take philosophy anyways, right? And regardless
well,
of why I had to take philosophy.
Right. And if you do, then I don't think anybody, you know, I mean, this obviously is going to take a lot of the pressure off. I mean, I would want to say that any undergraduate at a decent university would do, say, a couple of courses in philosophy, maybe one in improving your reasoning or something like that, and another in either political philosophy or ethics or something like that, which my son at the University of Toronto is doing right now. And I think he's going to be a better, wiser person for that. I mean, he wants to go become a lawyer, God forbid. But, I mean, I think we should all do some philosophy. I don't think we're ever going to be in the situation where, you know, 90% of the campus wants to do philosophy, except maybe in a Jesuit school.
Hassan, thank you very, very much for your call. I really appreciate it. Well, what do you tell a working-class kid who comes to you and says, Professor, I want to be a philosophy major? Do you say, go for it?
Well, first of all, I say to anybody who comes, you want to be a philosophy major, make a suggestion that you do a joint major, because I think that apart from anything else, I think your philosophy will benefit from, say, either to say do a political science degree. I did an undergraduate degree in mathematics and philosophy, and I certainly felt as a philosopher doing the mathematics was terrific. So I would always encourage somebody, you know, to spread themselves, particularly a bit as an undergraduate like that. But on the other hand, ultimately, you know, as the first chap said, we live in a democracy. If you want to do this and risk not getting a job at the end, I mean, you know, it's your choice.
Your choice. But on that point, let me throw one other critique to you from our comments page that kind of supports the governor's position. This is Rose, actually, from our Facebook page at Brian Lehrer WNYC on Facebook. Rose writes, liberal arts are soft. This country is going downhill because we celebrate singers, actors, and celebrities, but force our scientists to beg for grants to create that which will be of benefit to humanity. So is there something of the national interest that needs to be considered here, which maybe they do more of in China, which was mentioned earlier,
and not enough
in the United States, where it's all about the individual?
I mean, you've heard me for the last 20 minutes, and of course, I'm absolutely on side with that. I want to see significantly better science teaching in the schools of Florida than what we've got at the moment. I mean, my kids went to a local high school, good reputation, but I have to tell you, the science teaching, I thought, was abysmal. So if you want to say to me, we need to do something about science teaching, particularly at the high school, because these are the ones who feed into university, then I'm 100% with you. And if you're saying to me, then let's get the universities to do something about science teaching and these sorts of things, or scientists, I'm 100% with you. What I do want to say is I just don't see this as an either-or, but not both. I mean, it's like a doctor. I want a doctor to have, obviously, up-to-date forensic or whatever the, you know, medical skills. I want them to know about the drugs. I want them to know all of these things. I also want the doctor, though, to have a humanistic attitude, to know something about human nature, to know about the needs of people, to know, for instance, when, you know, a macho worker who watches football and drinks beer really is suffering but doesn't like to say so. So, I mean, a doctor, as I see it, has to have medical training, has to have psychological training, has to have, you know, I would say ethical, philosophical training. So it's not one or the other, but not both.
Let me take one more call, and it's Karen in Houston, Texas. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I have to say that I think that if you want more people in science, you have to pay us better. I'm a biochemist. Been out of school for 12 years, and I make very little compared to many other professions that would be having 12 years experience.
Is that really true? Because some of the pushback that I've been hearing says, wait, the incentive already exists. If people graduate with degrees in the science and technology fields, they're going to step into more opportunity in this country than a history major or a theater major.
Maybe it's reflective of the life sciences that I'm in, but I agree with your online comments that we're begging for money to do projects, for human health projects, and getting very little in the way of personal reward for financial. I do what I do because I love it, not because of the money, but I'm a single parent, and I wouldn't be able to support myself really on my own.
Karen, thank you so much for your voice. And we leave it there with Michael Ruse, professor of philosophy of science at Florida State University, the governor of Florida, who, of course, the ultimate chancellor of Florida State University, is considering a system of sliding tuition in which those who are majoring in things considered business-friendly get to go to school cheap. By the way, Professor Ruse, you've been pretty outspoken about this. You must be tenured.
I'm not only tenured. I'm 72 years old, so even if they drop me, if they want to make me a nice settlement, you know.
Thank you.
No, I want to go on teaching. I like to say I'm going to teach. My last day of teaching is the first day I'm going to discover whether being an atheist was a bad decision for the hereafter.
Oh,
you know?
All right.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Well, it's been great fun to talk to you and to the people who phoned in. Thanks a lot.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay tuned. WNYC's Richard Hake has joined us from the newsroom with developments in apparently a shooting at an elementary school in Newtown, Connecticut. Hi, Richard. What can you tell us?
Hey, Brian. Details are just coming in right now into the WNYC newsroom. This is an elementary school, the Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, as you mentioned. This is in Fairfield County, which is just right outside of Danbury near Brookfield, Connecticut, right off Interstate 84. The call came in at 9:40 of this morning. We're just getting word right now from the Associated Press that the gunman has been killed. Again, this just coming in right now. We don't know if this was self-inflicted or if this was from police, but we do know that there was a huge police response that went up there into Connecticut. This, according to the governor, Dan Malloy, tweeted that the state police are coordinating with federal and local authorities. Again, we do not know of any other injuries. Other media are reporting some injuries, NBC reporting that as many as four adults were hurt. A spokesperson for the Danbury Hospital told NBC it received three patients from the scene but would not give out any other details on the condition. Also, a dispatcher at the Newtown Volunteer Ambulance Corps said a teacher had been shot in the foot, also taken to Danbury Hospital. We've been seeing some pictures on the television as well as on some websites. The Newtown Bee newspaper posted a photo of a group of young students. Now, don't forget, this is an elementary school. Some crying, others looking visibly frightened, being escorted by adults through a parking lot in a line with hands on each other's shoulders. Again, the Associated Press now reporting that a gunman was killed. We do not know how many people were involved in the shooting. This was in Newtown, Connecticut. The call came in at 9:40. Other schools in this district are now in a lockdown mode.
And from what you're saying, it sounds that at least no children in this elementary school were shot. Is that the best information as of this moment?
The best information that we have right now. Again, the AP confirming that the gunman was killed. We have reports of adults being taken to hospitals, but no reports right now of children.
All right. WNYC's Richard Hake, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brian.
And we'll keep you posted on this, listeners. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And yesterday, if you were listening, you might have heard us take calls from immigrants from another country who were maybe not completely honest about their new life in the United States when they talked to their families back home. The idea for that segment came from Danielle, who told her story for WNYC's Radio Rookies Project about keeping the truth about the challenges of life here from her mother is still in Congo, so her mother wouldn't know how hard her life is in New York. But we know there are things about New York life that are difficult to report on, regardless of where you came from. On our comments page, Sheldon from Brooklyn wrote, "This narrative is not restricted to immigrants. It's about migration, North versus South, city versus country." Derry from New York City also posted, "Yes, and as a follow-up, being really honest about the New York City dream." So we're going to take Derry's follow-up suggestion here and open up the phone lines now on what you tell your friends and family in other parts of the country about life here if you're an immigrant to New York, not from Congo or India or Brazil, but from Sacramento or Wichita or Tallahassee. We know people move here from all over the United States to pursue what that commenter called the New York City dream as opposed to the American dream. Give us a call, migrants to New York City from other parts of America. How's it going? And when it's not going that great, what do you tell your friends and family back home? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Are you kind of exaggerating a little bit about the glories of the city life and the city lights? Are you kind of glossing over some of the dangers? Are you kind of glossing over the, 100 square feet that you live in? 212-433-WNYC. If you came here from anywhere else in the United States to pursue the New York dream, what are you fudging a little bit when you call home and you don't want them to say, hey, man, give it up. Just come back to Des Moines. 212-433-9692, and we'll take your calls right after this.